Tonight on Super Cinema, it's a Dark Knight super fight with Kryptonite and Justice. Welcome to Super Cinema, the comic book podcast where we break down the movies that comics have created. I'm your host, Ben Hamlin. I'm joined, as always, by the other half of my dynamic duo,
Donald Orr.
And today we are joined in studio, in my family room, by
Katie Hughes.
Katie Hughes, welcome back to the show. It's so good to see you after not having seen you for 4 days.
Was it 4 days?
Thursday.
Okay. I was like, I thought it was two.
Did I see you the day before yesterday?
No, I just, time is hard.
Time is difficult.
Time is relative.
Yeah. You know what else is difficult? Sitting through Batman v Superman. it's about time. About a year after we finally did the trailer talk for Batman v Superman, it's time that we actually sit down and review the movie itself. This is not our first review of Batman v Superman, is it, Donald?
No, sir. We after your first viewing of it last night, we did a little post-movie discussion, a little short, brief... just our first impressions of the film, although I've seen it two times, but it was your first. And Ben, why don't you...
Well, it's certainly the first time we had discussed it.
Right.
And it's highly recommended you listen to that episode if you do not have time for the full normal hour and a half that this podcast usually comes out to. That little 19-minute segment is actually a pretty good summation of, I think, both of our feelings about it. That's probably the most concise and eloquent I'm ever going to be about this movie. because this is the time that the gloves are off and we actually get real fucking mad about this pile of nonsense. But we would not be a podcast if we did not adhere to our structure. So Donald, are there any trailers that... Oh, I guess there aren't.
Oh, there is.
There is.
The Lego Batman movie. Oh. Had two
I
teasers.
Saw that. I sent that to my family already.
It had two teasers this week and I... freaking love it. I don't know if you've seen it yet. Maybe you'll...
I have, actually.
I'm did more you see the second one? About that I than only... I was about this movie.
I actually only saw the second one.
Okay, so you saw the Wayne Manor one, then?
Yeah,
that was on my Facebook page?
Yeah, the one that you posted.
It was so freaking funny. Will Arnett is back as Batman. And they got Ray Fiennes as Alfred, which I think is
that
perfect.
Who it was?
Yeah, he played Voldemort. He's in Grand Budapest Hotel, among many other movies.
The new M.
Yeah, the new M in Spectre, or in all the Bond movies now.
well, notably Spectre.
Yeah, and
Hail
I just...
Caesar, too.
Oh, that, too, yeah. I still need to see that.
It was really good.
Okay, I love the Coen Brothers movies, so I need to see that.
Yeah.
Anyways, the Lego Batman movie. First off, I am a huge fan of the Lego movie. It was probably my favorite, one of my, if not my favorite movie of... What was it, 2014?
I don't know.
It was a while ago.
It was wonderful. Everything was
awesome. And
I think it was spring 2015.
Okay. It was a while ago. And it is a travesty that not only was it not nominated for the Oscar, but it didn't win. Because that was in my opinion, the best animated movie that year. But I digress.
Oh, you know what? It just occurred to me. Actually, I think it was 14 because I believe it clashed with Frozen. And there was this big kerfuffle about the Academy just default voting to Disney.
Yep.
Because they don't actually bother to watch all the animated features.
Yep.
It was in 2014.
Yeah.
Thank you, IMDb. Release date, February 7th, 2014.
No, that's what I remember is that because it went up against Frozen.
Exactly. What I love about this teaser, and we're talking about the one with Alfred now, what I love about it is how self-referential Batman is.
No kidding.
I am in love with meta humor and how, like, WB and Lego and whoever else is making this film, they have the capability to make fun of themselves.
Yeah.
And the way that Alfred's like, but sir, you felt the same way in 2016, in 2012, in 2008, 2005, and so on and so forth. And that weird one in 1966.
Which obviously near and dear to my heart as a when we did our top five favorite comic book movies of all time thing, Batman 66 was my number one because I'm elitist hipster garbage.
And it's super funny to me that WB decided to release these teasers the same weekend as Batman v Superman because while they're the same character, Batman v Superman, the Batman in that is so dark, and we will go into it more later in this podcast, but this one's just so much fun and funny and makes fun of itself, but at the same time, like, it panders to children, but also adults in a way, just because it's not afraid to have fun, and it's what I loved about the Lego movie, and I see that same humor here.
You know, we actually don't have any more trailers to talk about, but I don't have anything to say about the Lego movie. Do you, Katie?
I just really like Batman orphan jokes more than I should. They pandered to that, and it was wonderful.
It was amazing. I'm really looking forward to the movie especially because of the cast. You got Will Arnett again as Batman, Ralph Fiennes as Alfred, Zach Galifianakis as the Joker.
Oh,
I didn't even think about him being a voice for an animated film, but that's just so funny and almost perfect to me. Michael Cera is Robin.
Crazy.
That is amazing. That is great casting. This will probably be my favorite movie in early next year. Looking forward to it. It may be the best Batman movie ever. Who knows?
Who knows? certainly not us. Well, we do have some photography. We got some released images of the Wonder Woman movie.
Yeah.
Just about 3 days ago, I believe.
Yeah. Okay. Help me out here. How do you pronounce the island?
Themyscira.
Themyscira. So like, Themyscira. Themyscira.
I think.
You think. It's like I'm saying the mascara.
Yeah. Okay. Comma also.
Comma also.
It's a made up word, so who knows?
True. I just don't want my nerd cred to go down like yours has many times.
When I referred to Mr. Fantastic as Richard Reeds.
Exactly.
Yes.
I can
understand the hesitation.
The image they released looks great. They got Gal Gadot on the front and center there with her Amazonian armor.
While we're talking about mispronouncing things, are you sure it's not Gal Gadot?
It's Gal Gadot.
Really?
Really?
Israeli. Yeah.
Oh, huh.
I've seen multiple interviews where she says her name.
Oh, pardon me for assuming French.
Thank you.
Gal Gadot. Yep. Anyways.
I've been confused and just avoided pronouncing it whatsoever.
Yeah. The other women in the photo look great as well. The only one I'm familiar with in the cast is Robin Wright, who's in House of Cards, and she's excellent. I'm sure she'll be very badass in this film as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman the most out of this slew of solo movies.
Same.
Mainly because, first of all, Wonder Woman is one of, if not the quintessential female character of, you know, of this century, last century. She's one of the most well-recognized female characters, one of the most powerful, one of the most inspiring.
Especially of DC.
Sometimes people still call her Superwoman.
Really?
Wow. And it's the first DC film in this universe to not be directed by Zack Snyder. It's directed by Patty Jenkins, so I'm really excited to see Woman...
Well, Suicide Squad.
Oh, right, sorry. Suicide Squad is this year as well, I suppose. And that's directed by David Ayer. But Wonder Woman from the Trinity, first... female superhero movie.
Period, actually.
Yeah, a solo female superhero movie. I mean, we've had Jessica Jones in her TV series.
Mm-hmm.
We had, a pretty bad Supergirl movie in the 90s, I believe.
The modern era.
Yeah. Yeah. Catwoman, Elektra.
Of the modern era.
Yeah. But Wonder Woman, this is the big one. This is the big deal. And I love that we have a woman behind the camera as well as mm-hmm. in front of the camera, and I'm really looking forward to it.
And I appreciated her assertion. There was, you know, immediately people were like, well, that's a white-ass cast for you. And, you know, did you see the tweet? The director said, like, oh, don't worry, Themyscira is a lot more diverse than that. This is just Wonder Woman's immediate family.
I believe it.
Yeah. So it looks
and,
like...
And
looks
Gal Gadot like taken... is... She's Israeli, so I don't know why everyone's screaming white. Because she's...
Yes, but... The other three people.
The other, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sure. But no, so it looks like they're taking a lot of comic concerns to heart, because diversity in comics is obviously a huge, huge discussion point right now.
What?
Yeah.
Don't say.
Shockingly.
Oh, man.
Did you have a chance to see the photo, Katie?
I just looked it up on my phone while we were talking.
Fantastic.
It looks so awesome. I'm so excited about Wonder Woman. I started reading her... with the New 52.
Right,
and I loved it. It was mm-hmm. wonderful. When I was growing up, my mom had a Wonder Woman mug that had, like, as swift as blah blah blah, as beautiful as Aphrodite, oh, sure, and stuff like that. And but I didn't realize how much of the Greek mythology was behind Wonder Woman until I started reading it. And I'm excited. I like me some Greek dramas, and I'm excited for Wonder Woman, and just watching her whole backstory come to life in real life. Well, not real life, but...
Well, yeah. I've got some good news for you. DC is doing their rebirth initiative in late May, early June, and Wonder Woman is probably going to be one of the best-selling books on the shelves, because Greg Rucka, who's a prolific writer, he's done Wonder Woman in the past.
Mm-hmm.
He's doing a bunch of great books now. He's coming back to Wonder Woman, and he's doing a... he's doing alternating stories with The Lies and Wonder Woman Year One. Okay. And I think that'll probably be one of DC's best books, just based on the writer and the artists. Their names are escaping me. I think it's Liam Sharp and Nicholas Scott, who are both great artists. But mm-hmm. I think Greg Rucka is going to bring something amazing to Wonder Woman again, and I'm looking forward to it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, recommend it.
I think we could touch briefly on DC Rebirth, because we did a couple episodes back, I believe, during our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle episode.
Right.
Where we're kind of theorizing it on it a little bit. Now we actually have some concrete, some very concrete things to talk about. Donald, you follow, you kind of follow like what's coming out in comics a little more than I do.
Uh-huh.
I'm more of a retrospective kind of guy.
Sure.
Are there any titles that are particularly catching your interest?
Yeah, I mean, I don't have this information right in front of me, but the ones that stick out just from the top of my head, Tom King, who's writing The Vision, Sheriff of Babylon, and Grayson, he is taking over Scott Snyder and doing a solo Batman run with David Finch. I'm really looking forward to that. He is probably the best up-and-coming writer in comics right now, and especially at DC. They exclusively signed him, so I'm looking forward to that title. Scott Snyder moved over to All-Star Batman with a slew of artists. Yeah.
Maybe we'll finally have a good All-Star Batman story.
Well, it's funny, because on stage, Jim Lee's like, what the hell, man? Because, you know, All-Star Batman and Robin was a thing, and that wasn't...
good at all.
Yeah. Anyways, Scott That's... Snyder... Well, legendary run on Batman so far with Greg Capullo, one of my favorites of the New 52, if not my the favorite.
Critically well received.
Oh yeah, it's, I mean, right now, like in 2016, it's Batman and Superman American Alien are the only DC books that I pick up on a weekly basis. Among other titles, Tim Seeley on Nightwing. I'm literally looking forward to that. Let's see, again, Greg Rucka on Wonder Woman, Dan Abnett on Aquaman, I'm looking forward to. There's a slew of other titles. They got some new writers for Batgirl, and Batgirl and the Birds of Prey. I believe it's the Larson sisters who write the 100 for CW. And that's a very that's a very female driven show. They're used to TV, and CW is usually known for its cheesiness, but their story intrigued me a bit.
Oh no, I laugh because I know that a lot of Infinity Break senior staff are very into that show.
Yeah, I hear it's real. It's one of the best shows on CW.
Not to name any names, but I'm specifically referring to Abby Erickson and Cam Mullins.
Yeah, and it's great that they got those writers on Batgirl specifically.
Yeah. Undergone a bit of controversy recently, that show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. For the marginalization of and killing of LGBT characters in lieu of actual emotional growth.
I see.
They're fridging. They're fridging LGBT characters.
Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunate.
It is. They've undergone a lot of recent controversy. But I've watched the first couple of episodes of that show, and I really liked it.
Mm.
So I have 100% faith in the writers.
Nice.
Of parts of it.
But
yeah, no, I mostly read, not to cut you off, sorry, but I mostly read comics about a year after they come out,
mm-hmm.
or sometimes 30 years after they come out.
Mm.
Well, I mean, we all read the classics. But you know, I'm usually a bit behind, so usually whatever you end up recommending to me, or I hear on other better comic podcasts, or from just really from comic friends, is usually what I end up picking up. So
gotcha.
I will get into Rebirth in about a year. Katie, anything that catches your eye? Are you familiar with the slate?
I am not. Or you, like me,
a total ignorant person.
I'm not familiar. I don't... I have a bad habit of not staying up to date on my comics. I looked at my comic pile, and the top of it is from November 2014.
I'm in the same boat as you. I have some comics that I just haven't touched yet, and they're from, like, high school.
Yeah, I pretty much... Like, from DC, I only read Supergirl and Wonder Woman.
Right.
And...
And,
I still need to read
her. Again, lucky for all of us, there is another Supergirl book coming out, finally. Really looking forward to that as well. There are a couple Green Lantern books coming out. I can't remember the writer's name on one of them, but I know Sam Humphries from Marvel signed exclusive to DC, and he's writing Green Lanterns, start with Simon Baz and Jessica Cruz. And
that'll that's right.
That'll be a good way to see more diversity in the Green Lanterns and just in DC in general. He described it as lethal weapon in space. So
I'll take it.
Yeah, so that'll be interesting for sure. I enjoyed his run on Star-Lord, although some didn't. But I thought he did a good job with Weird World as well. Let's see, what else? Oh, there's a... it's called The New Super-Man.
Yeah, I started hearing about this. I didn't look into it, but like I saw a bunch of like vague-ass tweets about it, and I was wondering what that was.
The writer's name, I think, is Jin Yuang. I can't remember his last name, but he is of Chinese descent, and this new Superman is of Chinese descent, which I think is very interesting. And I think it's almost like they took the Ms. Marvel approach to... you know, sort of borrowing a character's maybe power set slash name and sort of reinventing it to introduce some more diversity into the character. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. Again, really scraping from the top of my head here.
Has Fables ended yet?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Has it? Maybe.
I know
maybe
that...
Maybe it has. No, it has. It has.
Oh, okay.
Because the last issue was... it wasn't even an issue. It was a volume.
Yeah.
The last trade was the last issue.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I thought it ended.
Like I
year
said,
yeah.
Top of my pile is November 2014. So, I'm a few years behind.
I feel ya.
But I know that it was ending, and that makes me sad.
probably my most anticipated, besides Batman and All-Star Batman, Trinity by Francis Manapul and Clay Mann. Francis Manapul is probably my favorite artist at DC right now. Definitely one of my favorites next to Greg Capullo, although he's leaving DC for a little bit to work with Mark Miller on one of his books. But Francis Manapul is doing a Trinity book with Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and I love his artwork. He does really cool watercolors, and I'm really looking forward to that. Green Arrow by Ben Percy, new artist. His name escapes me again. But I really like Green Arrow. He's got the goatee back, and that's always a sign for a good Green Arrow story. So I'm looking forward to that. There are many more. They posted a video on their YouTube channel with the full announcement. So if there are any more, you can check that out, and I'm sure all of them are up on their website as well. That was all announced at WonderCon. Rumor has it that they're also going to do a quote-unquote rebirth for Vertigo at Emerald City Comic Con in July. And it's rumored that Gerard Way and Becky Cloonan's Doom Patrol will finally hit the stands. And that is a book I really, really, really want in my hands because Gerard Way, if you didn't know, is the lead singer of My Chemical Romance, a band a band that was... overly played on my iPod in middle and high school, but if you didn't know, he also went to art school for comic books and wrote comic books. He is now an Eisner Award winning comic book writer with his book Umbrella Academy, volumes 1 and 2, and both of those were just fantastic. And Becky Cloonan is a great artist, so I'm hoping to see that come into fruition. I'm sure Swamp Thing will come back through Vertigo because he didn't get a solo title, and many more through Vertigo. I'm really excited for that as well. It's just a good time to be in comics.
It is a good time to be in comics. I think all times are great times to be in comics.
True that.
But this, yeah, this next lineup is looking pretty promising.
Yeah.
I want to emphasize to the listeners that Donald was doing that off the top of his head with no written prompt whatsoever. Donald just low-key memorized the creative teams behind, like, different books.
I'm just really excited for Rebirth because I think, and DC isn't ashamed to admit this, which I think is a ballsy move. They have realized the New 52 may not exactly have worked for a lot of fans, except for a couple key titles here and there.
It was predominantly pretty mediocre.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say.
A lot of people agree. There were a lot of gems in the entire relaunch. Yeah. A lot of people agree.
You and I were talking in our local comic book store yesterday, because we support local business.
Right.
To the varying degree that you bought 3 issues and I bought 0. But, you know, we were talking about that, and we were talking about, like, we could only think of maybe, like, 6 things from the beginning of the New 52 that got any sort of high praise, and then maybe, like, another 6 in the next, like, 2 years.
Yeah.
Or so, and that includes, like, you know, the revamped Batgirl.
Yeah.
And, I guess, like, Grayson and those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it was not a spectacular era of DC Comics. And I'm hoping... Well, I think we're both hoping. We're all hoping that that's going to turn around later this year.
I think DC is finally putting their money where their mouth is. Because with the New 52, the only gems that... from the top of my head, Scott Snyder's Batman, Brian Azzarello's Wonder Woman run, Animal Man, Jeff Lemire... was fantastic, and then again Scott Snyder with Swamp Thing. Those are the ones I read that I thought were great. Oh, Geoff Johns' first few issues on Aquaman were fantastic as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as the years went on, you know, more and more stories became just diluted and the quality dissipated.
Well, not to mention there are so many that didn't even get there in the first place.
And I think it. Batwoman was a great one too.
Mm, yes, it was.
J.H. Williams III.
Before that met its truly untimely end.
And I think that's to the fault of DC's editors, because you have these reins on these creators who have ideas, but you can't restrain them for whatever reason. I don't know what was going on there, but I am hopeful that Rebirth will allow creators to be more... open to be more creative, have... more ideas flow, and just keep that integrity there, and just not have free reign, but just be... hopefully there's a more collaborative process there when they make more comics, and hopefully more good comics.
You want some free-range, grass-fed comics.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you're cage-free comics, pretty much.
Yeah, and DC did do the DCU initiative, Y-O-U, and, I mean, there were a couple good comics that came out of that. Prez is getting a lot of good buzz. Midnight Grayson. Tom King also. Midnighter. What else? Omega Men.
Gotham
also,
Academy.
Gotham Academy. Omega Men, also by Tom King. And, unfortunately, while quality books were being put out, they were sort of, like, left to the wayside because DC didn't really push these books enough. So I'm really glad to see them come out with this huge... parade for all these creators and all these books, and I know I'm rambling here, but I just implore you to check these books out, because Marvel has sort of taken over the comics market for many years now, as the New 52 books have dwindled, and, you know, Marvel's at the top of the charts with their Star Wars books, especially, and I think it's time for DC to take the limelight.
Mm-hmm. And I think there's no better point to transition to our discussion of DC's, what is in our mind, one of their greatest failures. Well, what is in my mind anyway? I mean, I don't know how it ranks against other missteps of theirs, but...
Well...
Let's go to a quick break, and then we will come back to talk about Batman vs. Superman. And a fair warning to our listeners, if you haven't caught on already, we are going to be digging deep into spoiler territory. We're going to be talking about every single inch of this movie, so if you haven't seen it yet, I personally would encourage you not to, but we're going to get into it. Hey, Infinity Break fans, do you want to show your support and devotion for an extremely obscure group of entertainers? Well, now you can. Just go to our website at infinitybreak.net and click on the shop tab to be whisked away to our Redbubble, where you can find all sorts of awesome shirts, stickers, notebooks, and other gadgets decked out with icons from all of our most popular shows. Act now, because that stuff will be there forever.
And we're back, and we are about to talk about Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. Again, we did a short little first impressions bit in our little last little segment. It's about 20 minutes long, and we focus more on the negative aspects of the film in that last episode, and Ben eloquently had a nice little soliloquy monologue thing. Well, we both did. We dealt
alas, with... poor Clark, I knew thee well. He was a fellow of infinite jest and most excellent fancy, and nay, how abhorred my imagination he is.
That is such a niche joke. Okay. But since we delved so much into the negative in that last episode, I really want to start off with the positive, what we really liked about the film. And Ben shouldn't start, so I'm going to give it to Katie, since she hasn't talked in a while.
I really want to emphasize, Ben actually didn't find anything he enjoyed in that movie.
Oh, man. So I went in with really, really low expectations, so I was able to actually enjoy the first two-thirds of the movie. After getting past the fact that, one, Superman is not a terrorist, two, Batman does not kill people, and three, Lex Luthor is not insane... If I just pretended that they happened to be called Superman and Batman versus actually being Superman and Batman, I was actually able to enjoy it, more or less. I thought that one of my favorite moments was in the fight with Doomsday. They had some action shots that felt like comic book panels. There's the scene when Doomsday and... Superman were going laser vision against each other, mm-hmm. and just like the way that they framed that looked like it could be a double page,
a splash page,
yeah, that sort of thing. I thought that was good in the beginning. While again, Superman is not a terrorist, they did a good job of showing us why Batman or Bruce Wayne viewed him as such. Ben's making a face.
Ben's face is contemplative, not dismissive.
Okay. And it's not Ben's turn yet, so...
Ben didn't think it was. That's why Ben made a facial gesture, not a speaking one. A speaking gesture, you know, when you talk.
Oh, man. But yeah, I feel like... It was fine...
Please continue.
Yeah, there are some parts where I didn't, so I was able to enjoy it enough that I wasn't making facial expressions until the last third, when I was just kind of like furrowing my brow and going but yeah, the
I think that was what many fans said Thursday yeah. night or whenever they watched it this weekend. Any other thoughts? The positives.
I like Wonder Woman a lot.
Yes.
She's fucking awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked the clips that we saw of Cyborg, Flash, and Aquaman. It took me the longest time. I was like, who is C? What is C for? Oh, yeah, Cyborg. Right. That was fun. So, like, those 20 seconds. While Lex is not insane, I thought that for whatever... Why they chose to portray him as such, I don't know. But I think that, what's-his-face, Mr. Social Media, did a good job of portraying the insanity. Even though... It shouldn't have been there in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And
It definitely wasn't Jesse Eisenberg's fault, because like I was telling Ben, if you boil down to just the performance, I actually think it's a really good performance.
Yeah.
If he was playing a crazy person.
Yes. Like
But Lex Luthor isn't a crazy person.
No,
that's what bothers
me. Like when I saw the commercials, I thought, I was like, oh wow, Jesse mm-hmm. Eisenberg could be a really good Joker or something. Apparently he originally read for The Riddler.
Yeah.
Would
have been way better.
Way better,
I was telling Ben in the last episode that it's like they literally just cut The Riddler and then copy-pasted Lex Luthor and just kept the same performance?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's, I don't know.
It's really...
Now we're getting into negatives.
Well, I think it's hard to talk about this movie for any conceivable length without bringing up the parts that, well, that brought things down.
But before we get to that...
Katie I also did bring
like...
up...
I also liked how... Okay, so I'm not familiar enough with Gal Gadot.
Nope. Gadot.
Gadot.
You added some new vowels to that one.
I wasn't familiar enough with Gal Gadot, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. To recognize her on the spot, so I wasn't sure at first when I saw her if she was Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. But I thought that the costumers did a really good job because they made a very strong golden metal piece part mm-hmm. of her outfit in two different times we saw her. And I liked that.
The armband. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They had the
shoulder piece.
There's the shoulder piece, and then in another dress it was like on the small of her back or mm-hmm. something like that.
That's a really cool creative choice.
Yeah, I liked that a lot, and that's what I was like, oh, wait a second. Is this going to be Wonder Woman? This mm-hmm. is going to be her. So I liked that. That was good.
Katie, one thing you did bring up that was actually one of the few parts of this movie that I enjoyed were some of those kind of ending action sequences. It was mm-hmm. that sense of, like, extraordinarily exaggerated motion.
Yes.
And I'm talking very specifically about that one shot where, like, Wonder Woman kind of rebounds herself off of the car.
Yeah.
And, like, that was cool.
And the camera, like, charges with her what would have been in scale probably, like, 200 feet or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah, yeah. And then she like, has that smile on her face, which apparently... the director didn't tell her to do that. She just kind of naturally did that.
That's
and
awesome.
Then they were like, wait, did you mean to do that?
She's Diana Mascara,
a
beast
warrior. Slayer. Like, Batman and Superman aren't warriors. They're just... Wonder Woman was trained to fight since a child. She would enjoy, like, a comparable matchup.
No, it makes 100% sense.
Yeah,
that,
I like
know,
that
she, like,
a lot.
Slays like Minotaurs and Cyclopses or whatever else, like she'd be open
She's
for this
so
kind of
awesome.
Challenge. Yeah, no, it was that sense of exaggerated motion I really liked, and it happened in my head. I think maybe there's like two times I can think of it.
Mm-hmm.
It is when she lunges toward Doomsday and Doomsday lunges back,
mm-hmm.
and like the camera does that really like kind of almost like tunnel shot, you know, where like the edges are blurred. It just kind of it feels like you're in the middle of like a jet stream.
Sure.
As you kind of follow behind her. And then I think the second time was the Dark Knight Returns cover shot.
Mm-hmm.
When Batman just kind of whips up to the, you know, whips up to the building, strikes the Dark Knight Returns lightning pose, and then like flies right back down. I think mm-hmm. those two moments of you know, heavily exaggerated movement, I mm-hmm. think, felt like splash pages, felt like, I mean, one's literally a cover, but, you know, felt like that kind of, almost otherworldly, you know, like it doesn't belong.
It felt like a comic book movie.
Yeah, it literally doesn't belong in film.
Yeah.
Like it belongs in comics, and that's what's cool. Obviously, I'm glad it was in the film.
Yes.
But like, that's not something you would see typically in a film.
Yes.
Right.
And that's it. That's all. That is truly all I liked in this movie. And then, like, I don't say that to be like a pessimistic asshole like I do about a lot of things. I'm on the record of being a bit of a cultural hipster in terms of not liking things that other people like. See my mini tweets about Angry Birds.
You don't want to see that movie?
No. You do?
I think it looks funny.
My mom made me sit.
Okay, hold on.
So...
I meant the mobile game.
Oh, I'm not a big fan of the mobile game because I think they're like milking it.
Yeah, no.
In a way, the movie's milking it too, but it actually looks kind of good.
When we went to go see Superman, Batman versus Superman, they had one of those big ol', let's promote Angry Birds with a cardboard thing that you can sit in and take pictures of. And my mom made me sit in it. And so naturally I just like frowned and made silly faces. And she was like, no, Katie, smile. And so finally I did smile, but I kept my eyes closed the entire time. And she's like, the only two pictures I got of you smiling had your eyes shut. I was like, that's because I was shutting my eyes.
That's funny.
Well, I exaggerated a little bit, but like I genuinely like no irony or snobbery involved. Genuinely disliked this movie. There were the reasons that I got into it, our mini cast, but like through most of this movie, I felt so pulled out of the narrative, and like Donald, I even told you like while we were in the car ride home. that there were so many times in this movie that I thought, oh, this is the scene that's supposed to make me sad. Or this is the scene that I'm supposed to feel tense in.
In the beginning, I did tear up at something. I can't remember what it was. But
was it Bruce Wayne's family dying?
Possibly. There was definitely water in my eye. No, I think it was the little girl. Oh, with her mom in the building. Yeah. That was sad.
That was brutal.
That was rough. Mm-hmm. But then, like, when Superman died, my whole family were like, we felt like we were supposed to feel something, but we couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Like, that's not something that happened.
Yeah, I just don't, I don't think, and I don't know what it was. I don't know if it's that every scene that had any sort of impact was ruined by weird dialogue, or every scene that was supposed to have impact was just edited weird, although that is certainly the case. A lot of the editing in that movie really kind of killed the tension in some bits. Like, okay, normally when you, like, cut away to a different scene, and this happens in comics all the time, this happens in Superior Spider-Man, even, which is a book I finished reading recently, where, like, you know, it'll be at the, like, the pitch of a scene or whatever, and then it'll just cut to a different scene. And you're like, no, no, go back, I want to find out what happens there. But, you know, you obviously have to keep reading in order.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not just gonna, you know, thumb through looking for the same set again. But in this movie, you know, they kind of did something similar, but I was just like, oh, yeah, I guess we're just over here now. Like, you know, I wasn't like, go back to that scene. It was just like, well, we moved on. But yeah, I don't know what it was. Like, this movie felt almost, like, devoid of any sort of, like, tension for me. I didn't get angry when I was supposed to get angry. I didn't, you know, fall for any of, like, the romance angles. I didn't get sad during the sad scenes. Like,
poor,
I don't know, it just
Amy
didn't
Adams
pull me in any direction.
Apartment floor. You like, know, that water damage.
Yeah. I was sitting next to one of my friends who was a maintenance technician,
mm-hmm.
and he got really angry during that scene, because he's like, you know how long it takes to repair that? And he got really mad.
That's hilarious.
I don't know. I'd like, this movie, I don't think, you know, say what we will about the story, and say what we did about the story, in our episode earlier this week, but, like, I don't think this even really works as a film.
There are so many weird dream sequences.
Yeah.
At first I'd be like, wait, is this a dream? I don't know anymore.
The narrative has, like, four ongoing plot lines. You know, Lex Luthor and the defense, the Department of Defense.
With Elastigirl.
Huh?
Yeah.
Elastigirl?
Senator Finch is the voice of Elastigirl in The Incredibles.
Yeah.
Oh!
That's why she sounds so damn familiar.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right. I was wondering, like, yeah, it sounded very familiar. Yeah. No, that explains it.
Yep.
But anyway, it was Luthor and the Department of Defense. It was, like, you know, Superman and Lois. It was Batman and Alfred. And then it was, like...
Alfred was great as always, though.
Yeah.
I liked him.
I really liked Alfred.
And then there was, you know, Batman and Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
As they were trying to figure out who the other metahumans were and that kind of stuff. And they were, like... four, and there's probably more that I'm forgetting, like, kind of plot lines that were just constantly threading in and out of each other. But, like, but it never really felt like there was a strong, like, logical conclusion to any of those. So, yeah, there were these four or five, like, central, you know, plot points, and then they were just so wildly weaving in and out of each other that they didn't, you know, it was kind of easy to lose track of them, and, like, the tension would hit a peak, and then it would just fall off, and it was just totally a mess in some places.
Cool. No, I agree. I went into my negatives in the last show, and I'll go into them again here, but I want to focus again on the positives. I thought Ben Affleck as Batman was phenomenal. I thought he made for a great Bruce Wayne and as a great Batman, with the exception of him using guns and killing people. And we'll get into the negatives. But, okay, positives, though. Ben, he was just... I thought he was really engaging as Batman. Anytime he was on screen as either Bruce Wayne or Batman, I thought it was just... I was able to, you know, be on the edge of my seat, even though I recognized very early on in the film that elements of the film I thought were mediocre. But...
I liked that they came home from Zorro.
Yeah.
And not the opera.
Yeah, that was cool. Nice
that
little
was fun.
Throwback there to yet another Bruce Wayne's parents dying scene. But it was well shot. It was well done.
No, it certainly was.
And the whole movie was well shot. The cinematography is great.
They shot the parents without us actually seeing them being shot.
Yeah, it was cool.
It was very focused on the gun.
Mm-hmm. Lots of cool close-ups.
I just want people to be happy, you guys.
That's what it boils down to for me. I was hoping that no, like for real. Like I was just hoping this would boil down to a full-blown team up and a team up that starts something interesting. But mm-hmm. the way it ends just feels so flat. And that's partly because nobody's character motivation makes sense. Like, you know, there are maybe
Batman's. This is the only one that makes sense out of any of them.
I don't think it does.
Really?
Yeah, because at the end, I don't understand why he turns, why he pulls that 180. Like, there's the whole,
definitely rushed for sure.
There's the whole, you know, Martha thing. But then why does he go from we shouldn't have this all powerful person, you know, interfering in our.
The same mom name.
Why does he go from we shouldn't have this all-powerful person interfering in our affairs to let's put together a team of all-powerful people to interfere in other people's affairs?
Because right. You said Martha.
Yeah, because they have the same... Because he's human? Well, so is Flash and Aquaman and Cyborg and Wonder Woman and the Atom.
Well...
Not the Atom.
To the movie's credit, I think with that introduction of the Justice League and that weird, well, not weird.
Intrusive.
Yeah. But again, the positives. Ben Affleck, great. I personally loved Alfred. Every movie we've gotten a really good Alfred.
Alfred's always wonderful. And I want an Alfred movie. Can we just focus on Alfred, please?
Alfred the movie.
You mean?
Where it's all just happiness.
You wouldn't be talking about before the war. With your father.
And it's really, he's really one of the only sources of joy in the movie just because of his snarkiness and sarcasm and his banter with Bruce, which I loved. It was really reminiscent of the animated series, which I really like.
You do get the sense that those guys have been working together for a long time.
Yeah, and I
and obviously in canon that's the case.
Yeah, and I really, really enjoy that. What else? Henry Cavill was fine as Superman. I don't want to discredit him as an actor because I feel like he did the best he could with what he was given.
Yeah.
Same for Amy Adams. I thought she was fine as Lois Lane. I'll get more into the negatives with her character. Wonder Woman was great.
I love Wonder Woman.
I mean, there are some scenes when, you know, it was kind of weird that she was put in there just as a way to introduce the Justice League, but her interactions with Bruce I thought were great. There was that scene in the museum that was very reminiscent of The Dark Knight Rises when, you know, Bale talks to Catwoman while they're dancing. It's very reminiscent of, you know, him trying to seduce her to get answers or something. But I thought Gal did a good job in that scene, both as Diana and as Wonder Woman in the end there. The costume looks great. I thought her fight choreography and scenes were wonderfully shot.
The lasso of truth.
The lasso, when she lassos so Doomsday, very comic booky. Although I don't know if the third act is really deserved because it's really hard to feel anything during that scene. I guess, but it's still cool. I'm really looking forward to her solo movie. The score of the film, the Batman suite, it's like, it's sort of Inception-y to the sense where it's like, blah, 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 blah.
I mean, what can we expect from... blah, 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 blah. I mean, what can we expect from the guy that, like, incepted the Inception suite style of music? And used it very prominently in what is a weird sentence at this point. His last three Batman movies.
Yeah.
No disrespect to Mr. Zimmer, but Mr. Zimmer does have the tendency to rely on a very.
He has motifs.
Yeah.
Yes, and I don't think they work in every movie that he makes them in.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
I still enjoyed most of the score, though. Lex Luthor's theme, I thought, was more. What's the word? memorable than Batman's. Batman's just seemed very generic. Lex Luthor's theme was good. Wonder Woman's theme was kick ass, and I hope they use that in the solo movie with the guitar. It sounds like the Immigrant Song, but with like drums.
Yeah.
And it sounds great.
It sounds like the opening to the 90s cartoon version or something.
Yeah, well, it sounds like
the X-Men theme.
It sounds Amazonian, like just like brutal, but like just warrior-esque.
So excited to see the Amazons.
Yeah. Metal, you might say.
What's that?
A little metal, you might say.
Yeah, yeah. What else? I will say, while I think introducing these characters in an email it's very lazy.
Lackluster.
Yeah, like, it's a really lazy way to introduce these characters. I thought the individual teasers, for lack of a better word, were good. I liked seeing Aquaman. The Cyborg one was really cool, I thought.
Because
you saw him hanging on the wall there. I liked it, Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that it's shoehorned in there, but when I'm dissecting it and looking at the scene itself, I thought it was
really
cool.
Sure.
Yeah.
I don't like the scene itself, though.
Oh, really?
I feel that entire scene feels very intrusive into the story.
No, I do, too.
I
don't think it... Like, it doesn't fit within the narrative, but then just looking at it as itself, I think...
A lot of critics have said that. A lot of critics have said that, you know, that scene doesn't belong there. That's actually maybe a textbook example of what I'm talking about, where, like, the tension is building re this great Superman v. Batman fight, or this great... Well, I guess this great Doomsday fight or whatever, and then we have to take a moment to stop to check Wonder Woman's emails.
Yeah,
like that. Because
it was in the middle of the climax, so it was definitely weird.
That's not even a joke. That's like exactly what happens.
Yeah,
we have to watch Wonder Woman check their emails.
I'm glazing over those facts because I'm trying to focus on the positives still.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I assumed we gave up on that.
No. There are still a few more.
Sorry, but if I could touch on the Cyborg thing.
Sure.
Well, I guess no. I can wait till we talk about negatives.
God.
Well, all you have are negatives.
I had one positive.
You have one
positive. I think it's genuinely impossible to talk about this movie without like running out of positives really quick.
And the nightmare scene, even though Batman shoots and inevitably kills people, I thought it was still really cool. Although there's speculation that it may not be a dream sequence. It might actually be a premonition, like a vision into the future, because, you know, right after Flash...
Wouldn't that just be a category of dream sequence?
I mean, it is a dream sequence per se, but like there's evidence to say that it's actually a vision of the future, or a possible future, with that, because right after you see Flash breaking the time barrier and trying to warn Bruce of he's coming, or you know,
in the boom tube,
in the boom thing.
They need better names for things. The world sucker, whatever that was, the boom tube.
Well, boom tube is boom. Ooh boy, boom tube is canon, and I now regret having to say that out loud.
I'm aware. I'm just saying it's still a dumb name.
I thought that was kind of cool. They're teasing Darkseid. The negative to that though is there's a lot of Easter eggs in this movie. It's almost like what should have been an end credits scene per se, you know, a la Marvel, they just threw in the middle of the movie, and you know, the general movie going audience, they don't know who Darkseid is. They might not even know who the Flash is.
Hypothetically.
Mm-hmm. And you know, that scene was just sort of thrown in there. But again, looking at the individual scene, I thought it was cool. I thought it was scary. Yeah.
It was loud scary. Noise, and I shut my eyes, and I didn't know it was happening.
Yeah, actually, now that I think about it, that scene felt really intense to me. Like, when I was in the theater, and I know I was just complaining about none of it feeling, like, real or impactful to me. Like, that was the one scene where I felt uncomfortable. I don't think on purpose, but because, like, it felt like it was going on way too long.
I just shut my eyes for the entire boom tube scene because I thought there would be more scary things. When I closed my eyes, I thought I was seeing green and purple, and so I just assumed it was the Joker. Mm. And I was like, this is going to get scarier, so I'm just not going to look.
Or that beautiful, sleek Lex Luthor power armor.
Oh, that'd be great.
I say sleek, of course, because it's usually a bulky mess. that scene felt like just weirdly intense. I guess it's because I had just watched Batman kill like 3 dozen people or whatever. But then, yeah, like that loud booming, like screeching portal sound.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, go back. Mm. You know, like all sorts of weird audio mixing.
I didn't know what was happening. Afterwards, I started
uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It's interesting because a lot of hardcore, quote unquote hardcore, DC fans, like, oh man, it was Flash, like he was, you know, breaking the time barrier, traveling and all that jazz, but like to a general moviegoer, like, they're not gonna know what that is. They're mm-hmm. like, and that scene just thrown in there.
After the movie, my dad and I kind of sat down and we researched multiple things, and he initially thought that it was what's his face, Scott Free.
Oh, Mr. Miracle.
Yeah, he thought it was that. Like, if someone has been reading comics since, like, yeah, I don't know, the 70s, didn't know who it was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I only knew it was Flash because somebody said, you know, I read a review in advance that said it was Flash.
Hmm.
Mm.
So, who knows? But, yeah.
Was it the same actor as Flash in the
Ezra Miller?
Security camera?
Yeah.
Presumably, yeah.
Yeah, no, okay. It is, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Other positives. The action was well shot. Again, everything, like the Batman warehouse scene on its own is, I thought, was really cool. Besides, again, the shooting and the brutality. I didn't like the branding part.
Yeah, that was weird.
It was very weird.
I tried to read the graffiti in the background a lot. I noticed Joe was mentioned twice, but I looked it up afterwards and nothing was about that. But, I thought it would have been cool if when they were fighting through that whole graffitied area, if the graffiti in the background were, like, comic onomatopoeias.
Yeah.
Because at one point in time I saw something that said RAR, like, R-A-W-R, and I was like, that would have been so much cooler if that said, like, Biff, Bang,
Biff, Bang, Pow. Yeah. I saw a Riddler question mark in there.
Yes,
that was
there was a question mark in there.
The fight on its own, the Batman versus Superman part, that was pretty brutal.
Mm-hmm.
It was cool. Almost a little too brutal for me, to be honest, but it was still shot well. It was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
What else? I guess the final fight with Doomsday, when you, again, the lead into it, like, Doomsday, it felt forced, but when, you know,
Doomsday felt a lot like King Kong to me, especially when he jumped onto that giant building, and I was like, oh,
yeah,
there's our giant ape.
Yeah. Well, I see a lot of people were saying when he first got revealed in a trailer, like, some mm-hmm. 6-odd months ago, that people were saying it looked a lot like one of the cave trolls from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's what...
Abomination from Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, yeah.
Was compared, yeah.
Yeah, he looked like an orc, like a giant. Yeah. He felt very Lord of the Rings. It's like the teeth and the face...
And the CGI was just so, I wasn't a fan of it.
I was
a fan of it in the explosions because that made it feel more comic booky to me.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Yeah, when I came home last night after we recorded our mini episode, our special effects designer for Infinity Break, Elijah Frederick, asked me, like, if the special effects were any good. Like, yeah, the special effects were interesting, but it didn't feel... Like, that's only, like, set dressing, you know, that's spectacle, and it feels like if there's nothing behind that spectacle, then it doesn't matter to me. Like, you know, I didn't really... I mean, yeah, there were, like, some cool shots that I thought were interesting, like, you know, how they portrayed Superman's laser vision, how it, like, started around the irises and then expanded out to the corneas. Like, that stuff was, like, kind of cool, but, like, when you... Like, when you pair that up with, like, the emptiness of that narrative, like, none of that actually... Like, when I see Superman angry, I want to feel angry with him, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas I was just feeling like, what are you doing now? And I think that's the problem. Donald, you were talking about, like, a lot of these scenes were cool as they stand alone. And the problem is that, like...
A movie doesn't stand alone.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're part of this grand overarching movie that... Those scenes in those orders with those motivations, with those character moments, with those scenes, don't really connect a lot of the times. You know, we're talking about scenes that feel literally intrusive, like Wonder Woman checking her emails, or just all of a sudden they're at a museum, all of a sudden they're at a party, all of a sudden they're back at the Batcave There are lakeside thing.
No establishing shots in this movie.
It feels like we're being like whipped around in different directions.
Reminds me of that scene in the dream movie.
Inception.
Reminds me of that scene in Inception when someone tells Ellen Page, if you don't remember how you got here, you're in a dream.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't see how you get things. You don't have the establishing shots. It's just, that's why I kind of had a hard time when they had so many random dream sequences.
Actual dream sequences, yeah.
I was just like, I don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the movie did a weird thing where it didn't really ever distinguish. Like, there were some scenes that could have been dreams, and there were some scenes that could have been reality. And then it's revealed, toward the end that, you know, it was the reverse. And I think that's kind of indicative of the whole film that, we're literally just bounced all over the place. And characters change their opinions about things. Like, you know, what I said, it's weird that Batman goes from, we shouldn't have all powerful people interfering in the lives of humans, to let's create a team of all powerful people interfering in the lives of humans.
The people did a complete 180 as well. As soon as Superman dies, all politics go aside and it's like, oh man, he was a hero. What about when he saved you in Metropolis? I mean, he destroyed the city, but I digress. Like, he destroyed the city again because of something Kryptonian.
Yeah,
the
people are changing their minds. Batman changes his mind.
Yep.
You know, Superman kind of changes his mind during parts of it. It's Lex Luthor doesn't have a strong enough character arc in any direction.
He is losing his mind.
He's losing his mind, yeah. Like, every once in a while, Lex Luthor just starts talking about, like, white rabbits or balloons or...
Yeah.
Or there's this one line when he's talking to Finch. I guess he's saying the redcoats are coming.
The red capes are coming. Red capes are coming.
But he does it in this weird, like, foggy, like, or, like, not foggy, like, croaky voice.
Yeah.
Like, the red capes are coming. Is he undergoing, like, a demon possession? Like... His character is, like, all over the map to the point where I can't pinpoint it. I can kind of pinpoint where Bruce is going some parts, but then he does, like, a 90-degree or a 180-degree turn. And, like, none of these characters seem to be staying in one place for any amount of time. And, obviously, characters are supposed to go over natural arcs. They're supposed to start in one place and end up in another place, you know, whether that's 360, a 180, a 90, or 45-degree angle, whatever. To get all geometric about it.
We use radians here, Ben.
Of course. But it never felt like any of those sudden shifts in opinion or character ever felt that natural to me. And that's what bugs me, is that, like, the connecting thread of these movies, and yeah, there were a lot of cool scenes. That warehouse fight was cool. Other scenes? No, I can't think of all
of
them.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
Lex Luthor, like, finding the Kryptonian archive, I thought was kind of a cool scene.
Mm-hmm.
Is the council here?
Did you see the deleted scene that WB just posted?
Nope.
It, like, adds a whole another element to the movie that, like, it's like, why didn't they keep that in there? But at the same time, it raises, like, 20 more questions.
Yeah.
It almost seemed like another forced thing.
Those scenes were cool, but yeah, the connecting tissue just isn't there for me. And, like, Donald, you were in the theater with me. You saw me, like, just kind of, like, verbally, like...
As I knew you would.
Mouth, like, why? There were so many points where, like, let's make a game of it. Why does Superman randomly stop Batman's attempt to stop the heist?
Take a shot.
Of Kryptonite.
Take a shot, yeah.
Yeah.
Drink a game. Oh, man, when we get the three-hour cut, I'm going to make you watch the three-hour cut, because we're going to make a drinking game out of that.
Oh, please.
Okay.
Please. Anytime Superman seems sad about nothing.
I didn't see it, Lo.
Didn't see it, Lo. Yeah. Why is there even a suicide bomb? Like I know why Lex wanted one. Why does Lex just randomly let Mercy die?
Yeah, that's weird.
Why does the council forbid these great ancient weapons? You know, why do they keep referring to it as, like, that scene bugged me. They're like, the beast that must not be known or whatever. Like, it's Voldemort or whatever. But, like... Nobody in Kryptonian history has ever combined a General Zod with human blood. So, a Kryptonian with human blood. So, like, how often do these abominations happen? How often do they kidnap humans what's the form? Have they replicated this formula before? Like, there's so many moments where, like, why? I want more details on that. And unlike in Man of Steel, where I was saying, like, I want more details on that, about things that character angles I could find interesting.
Yeah.
And, like, kind of alternate takes on the story. This was just, like, the basics. There were so many, like, basic character moments where I was like, but why is anyone doing what they're doing?
Yep. Especially Lex.
Especially Lex.
Yeah.
Like, why does he actually want them to fight?
Yeah.
Like, you barely pick up on it. Like, and you don't even know what it is. Does he have daddy issues? Yeah. Does he have this, like, weird god complex? Yeah.
Does he hate dictators?
Yeah. Like, he has this weird, like... But there's such a thin thread between his connection to hating Superman and the whole
Eastern European
angel
dictator.
Thing.
Oh, yeah. And then there's that. Yeah. And then it's all of biblical proportions. And then...
Philosophical. And
he's, like, predicting Darkseid's coming or whatever at the end.
My only...
And then he's like... Oh, now they know that God is dead. And like,
ding, 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 ding.
And then...
Ding, 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 ding.
But, like, Lex, you killed God. So, like, what are you complaining about? You caused that to happen. So, like, yeah, people's characters are in going in every different direction. And then, yeah, he starts talking about rabbits and bells and
I don't know, all sorts of shit.
I just don't...
I heard that... okay, I might say things wrong. I heard that very, very sharp, far-fetched... theory on the internet was that the ding 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 dings were supposed to be reminiscent of the pings that come before the boom tubes.
Okay. Yeah, I figured he was talking about Darkseid, but again, yeah. Like, where does he...
How does the audience know that?
Yeah, the audience doesn't pick up on that. Like, you have to assume pretty much, like, oh, maybe he learned that from the Kryptonian archives?
Yeah, there.
But why would
he just, like, finds things out and we don't see him find things out?
I'm really curious about the three-hour cut.
This movie had... Yeah. I guess this movie literally had a third-act exposition scene in the form of the Kryptonian archives, which is usually a pretty bad thing to have. But mm-hmm. we didn't even get to see that exhibition scene. Mm-hmm. Like, only one character got the exhibition scene... And then, yeah, we just, like, the audience is just still in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
It just, man.
We're in the dark.
And truly, and like, that's what was so frustrating about this movie to me, is that I kept, like, kind of jokingly mouthing, like, why? Is because I was so pulled out of the narrative by my quest to understand what the narrative even was. And that's capital B bad filmmaking.
When I first saw the film, I went in, I knew about the reviews, but I was like, okay, I'm going to keep an open mind, like, I'm going to try to enjoy this movie, and, like, as soon as Bruce falls down the well, and he's, like, ascends
up the well,
I'm like, I audibly said, what?
I know, I was just like, no?
Yeah,
no?
Like, and then it's like, and then Bruce is like, it's a dream, they brought me into the light. I'm like...
What the... You're supposed to be afraid of the bats. They don't...
Yeah.
Yeah, wait. That was a dream?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that... I didn't even catch that.
I was so fucking confused at first.
I didn't catch it until the second time.
I kind of...
See, like, literally, what the hell?
Yeah.
They're mixing... Well, I mean, I know this is all in a film, but they're mixing fantasy and reality. They're mixing, you know, dreamscape and non-dreamscape. Mm-hmm. You know, they're mixing...
Without, like, clear lines between
There's
them.
No clear lines, to the point where you just assume, oh yeah, this is just what's happening, until, you know, psych, at the end, it's not a dream or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it's literal madness. Yeah, no, when that bat scene happened, I saw two things I absolutely hated. Well, three things. The one, bat swirling around him, and him, like, flying upwards, which is weird, because obviously... Bruce Wayne is supposed to be scared of bats when he's eight.
Yep.
Yeah.
Two, the weird, like, Christ hand position thing.
Yep.
And three, written by David Goyer.
Chris Terrio.
Yeah, I only care about one of them, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was the bad part for me. No, I don't care about Chris Terrio, but, like, I did see written by David Goyer, and I was like, ooh, there we go. Three bad things on the screen at once.
That was just so weird. There are so many weird dream sequences that I just can't get over.
A lot of weird choices. I agree with you. The film is very disjointed, especially in the first third of the movie. Nothing... Character motivations. Why Superman was forced to fight Batman. I thought, like, the basis of that fight would be more ideological, which would make the fight... Like, you would feel more during the fight. But no, it's because Lex kidnaps Superman's mom...
Yeah, I thought it was going to be like, what is it in The Dark Knight Returns? It's like fascism versus like freedom or whatever.
Yeah, it's way more interesting.
Because like Superman's like, isn't Superman working for the man at that point?
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've read Dark Knight Returns.
I wish like, and many other people online have said this, they should have just done a Dark Knight Returns adaptation instead of cramming in the Doomsday thing and just do a straight to form adaptation. Well, I feel like
this is... Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, it's they have elements of it in there, but it's just not... I don't know.
This is something I've been worried about from the very beginning, is that... And I've said it on this podcast. I think I said it when, like, the title Batman versus Superman first got announced. It's like, this is an end story. This is supposed to be... Like, their big ideological friendship-shattering battle is supposed to happen at the end of their story. And I've been uncomfortable from the very beginning with the idea that this is how they start their story.
It's also based on an out-of-continuity story, too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so, yeah, that aside.
Yeah.
I mean, Dark Knight Returns is often considered, like, the end of the...
Yeah.
Of that era of comics.
Yeah.
But, like, I don't know. To me, it, like, it truly makes no sense to just kind of bring that up out of... Bring that up at the beginning. Like, before their friendship falling apart, like, means anything.
Yeah.
I don't mean to compare it to Civil War, but, like, at least with Civil War, we've had, like, you know, two acts worth of Captain America and Iron Man working, you know, together to some degree, so that their fight between the two of them is, like, in some way meaningful. Whereas here, starting off at the beginning, like...
It's like, oh, you know, these two strangers don't agree.
Yeah.
And let's make them fight.
And then when Batman's like, oh, you know, they killed my friend, I'm like, friend? You legit, like, liked each other for all of 40 minutes before he died. Like, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
Well, I think with that, I mean, we... with the minor positives in this film that there are, I think we're all fairly disappointed in the film. I think we're all in agreement there.
Yeah. Can we talk about the end? I feel like they didn't hint enough to the fact that, like, Superman's not dead. He's in Kryptonian sleep or in a catalyst or
whatever.
Yeah,
that shot of the dirt,
like,
rising.
The dirt rising, I was confused because the way that it rose, I was like, oh, is someone with metal powers coming? And, like, iron in the dirt is footing? And
I think it was a clear allusion to the I guess it's an after credits or it's, like, the last shot of the movie scene from X3 where Magneto is, like, The chess piece on Magneto's chessboard moves slightly.
Yeah, but with that, I understood because Magneto has metal powers and he can move the things. I was confused. Like, is it supposed to be energy moving the dirt? Like, what? Was,
I think. Well,
like, if they moved the entire casket, I would, or like slightly, I would understand.
Or if the dirt was like floating there, like it was some sort of like electromagnetic.
And it was only
nonsense.
Like a few of the pieces of the dirt on the top of them. Not even like near the pieces of dirt closest to the casket were affected. That
in
the only hinting was that there was a Genesis chamber. And that's all the hinting we get.
In Man of Steel, when he takes his first flight, you sort of see the little rocks and snow to start lifting when he's about to fly. So the implication pretty much from that scene is he's about to wake up.
Okay.
In all of, like, that, WB, like, while the movie was, in my opinion, mediocre, they did a ballsy thing by killing off Superman. And they didn't even fully commit to that idea because, literally 4 minutes later, they pretty much say, oh, actually, he's alive.
And that's the thing.
You feel nothing. Like,
none of this has any emotional weight.
Yeah.
Because, you know, Superman's maybe going to make it, you know, but then he grabs the Kryptonite spear. Oh, he's not going to make it. And then, oh, he kills Doomsday. He is going to make it. And then, you know, he gets stabbed. Oh, he's not going to make it.
Yeah.
And then he, you know, he's, like, permanently dead or whatever. But then, like, 5 minutes later, oh, he is going to make it. It's taking you on a roller coaster, and roller coasters, like, tone shifting and that kind of like suspense driving stuff in narrative is fine. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But it is if you do it like twice.
But this just kind of felt like, he's gonna make it. Like, he's Superman. This is gonna be fine. They need more movies.
Or
they're gonna...
before even Doomsday, you know, oh, he's saved by Batman. Oh, maybe he would be killed by Batman. Oh, maybe they're gonna get through this fine, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of narrative shift, that kind of twist at the end, works if you do it maybe once or twice. But if you do it, like, 6 or 7 times in a row, like, you know, you get jerked around so fast that, mm-hmm. like, you just kind of stop caring.
Yeah.
Mm. And then this movie just, the movie is so dark. Like, I don't mean that. Obviously, a majority of the movie takes place in, like, a rainstorm. But, like, this movie sees, like, poor old Martha Kent, like, beaten, abused, and gagged,
so
or whatever.
Sad. I didn't like that.
It's and, like, just not,
I want more sunflowers.
Not Cyclops. Cyborg's, like mutilated chest, like, hanging off of, like, some sort of weird, like, operating table.
Like a pin board.
Yeah, it shows, like, oh, what was the other, there's another really gross scene. Okay, I mean, I guess, well, Lex Luthor slashing his hand open isn't that bad. But there's like so many scenes where it's like, I'm sorry, do you think you're like a Netflix TV show? Like there's so many scenes where, I guess I just have a problem with like Martha Kent being like held
especially
hostage like that.
Since we were talking about when we watched Man of Steel, how we were looking forward to hopefully seeing more flashbacks to Smallville and the more positive spin on things.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, this movie, like I talked about the philosophical, like kind of meta narrative of this movie. In our mini episode where I said that this is a movie that like denounces the idea of good and says that superheroes are wrong, you know, and that kind of stuff. But mm-hmm. like also this movie just like fully embraced like real dark shit, like really dark kidnappings, really dark. I mean, there's a fucking suicide bomber in this movie. Like, I don't know, man, not in my superhero movies. I don't like that.
It's not the DC universe I
want to
see.
I just want people to be happy.
Yeah, I said in my tweets the other day that like, yo, I just want Crypto, I want Scarecrow, I want Plastic Man in the Fourth World in the Bottle City of Kandor. I just want big silly shit. I don't want to see Martha Kent like bloodied. Yeah, I don't want to see Martha Kent bloodied. I think that's it. I'm not asking for a ton here. Please just don't beat up elderly grandma Kansas farmer lady.
Oh, I just thought of another positive. Sorry. I really liked the Kevin Costner scene.
Oh, really?
When Superman's on the mountain and he's hiking and they talk about the saving the farm and all that. I liked that. I don't know.
I
kind of
liked it too.
Again, it just you know, came out of nowhere, but I liked it.
Yeah.
That I think actually was one of the scenes that did work, because now that I think about it, that did kind of push the you can't have it all narrative, mm-hmm. of like, yeah, we saved our farm, but turns out we accidentally killed some horses.
Yep.
You know, in the mm-hmm. same way that Superman's having the, yeah, I can save Lois, but then I accidentally caused an international incident kind of stuff. And mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. the way that idea was portrayed worked a lot better than I almost pronounced it like Donald Trump pronounces the word loser. Lex Luthor's you can't be all powerful and all good. Like, that felt so flat in comparison to the more nuanced. Sometimes you have to do something that saves yourself but hurts others.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think overall this movie feels like it is told from Lex Luthor's side. not literally like Lex Luthor's our viewpoint character.
Yeah,
like, you know, Belle is in the Castle of Beauty and the Beast or whatever. But, like, it feels like this is what Lex Luthor thinks of. It feels like Lex Luthor wrote the fucking script, is what I'm getting at. It's like, well, I've got
to prove their portrayal of Lex Luthor.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, or even comic book Lex Luthor. Well, I have to prove to the audience that superheroes are bad. you know, and then, obviously, you know, I've got to make it clear that Superman isn't actually that good. You know, like, it feels like a supervillain wrote this. How can I convey that the guy everyone likes is a jerk? Any ideas?
Are you saying David Gore is a supervillain?
I'm saying he's also bald. I'm saying I'm saying him and Lex Luthor are
have you ever seen David Gore and Lex Luthor in the same room?
You know, I don't think I have.
Well,
all I'm saying is that David Gore has some very Lex Luthor like tendencies.
Well, I think all we need to say about the film has been said.
Yeah, let's cut to the happy part where we talk about comics.
Yay!
Massive disappointment. But yes, happy comics. Let's go.
Stay with us after the break as we talk about the comics we have been reading. We work tirelessly to make this show and others free and accessible to listeners. So if you like what we do here at Infinity Break and you want to support us, there's a very easy way to do that. We have a Patreon at patreon.com/infinitybreak. If you want to chip in a monthly donation to help us keep this show and all of our comics, podcasts, and videos running and improving with each month, we'd greatly appreciate your show of support. Right now, we're working on improving the audio quality for both our videos and our podcasts, as well as developing new shows that are coming out in the next couple of months, including new podcasts, new comedy sketches, and new web series. We hope that you're just as excited as we are about the future of Infinity Break, and we're hoping that you can be a part of it. Once again, that's patreon.com/infinitybreak, and every donation helps. Thanks for listening, and as always, tell your friends. And now, back to the show. All right, we are done talking about that swamp of sadness, and we are here to talk about the comics that we've been reading. Spring break has passed, I believe, since our last episode. I believe. No, factually, spring break did occur. So I think we've all had some time to read some books we've been enjoying.
If my concept of time is correct, spring just happened and we had a week off of classes.
Now, this is probably a bad time to bring this up, but like Merlin, I experienced time backwards. So it was great when you guys came here 15 minutes ago, and I can't wait to record this podcast for the next 2.5 hours. Also, I can't wait to start college.
Wow.
Yeah, spring break just happened, so I think we all had some time to read some books that we enjoy. Katie, I will ask that you go first. You've been reading a book that kind of spawned out of our last conversation.
Yeah, I've been reading things.
That's true.
So, the first thing I read during spring break was Seconds by Brian Lee O'Malley. I really enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. I liked the nods that he had to Scott Pilgrim. There was the classic line from Scott Pilgrim, "Bread makes you fat," that he was able to put in there with underneath the panel, "Sorry," in really small font. And then Ramona and Scott were actually customers in Katie's restaurant, which was a lot of fun.
Oh yeah, that's right. You share a name with the main character.
I do, yeah. I share my name with the main character, and it was really weird reading the first thing when the narrator is talking about the main character, and the main character is responding pretty much essentially how I would if a narrator was narrating my life, and I was grumpy that day. So that she's 20 years old, doing fantastic, in her opinion. And I would like to think that I am also 20 years old and doing fantastic. And so after that, I read Sex Criminals Volume 2.
Nice.
It was wonderful, and I loved it, and it was great, and it's wonderful. Everyone read it, please. And I really enjoyed the sex tips at the end. Can I take a moment and just, like, read three of these? Because I definitely took pictures of them to send to my friends.
I think Matt Fraction and Chip Starsky actually compiled all the tips into one book.
Into just the tips.
Just the tips, yeah.
Yeah.
Gross.
BDSM stands for Bondage, Discipline, Spider-Man. Ladies looking to blow his mind in bed? Invent a time machine. Spice things up by using a vacuum cleaner during sex if your fetish is emergency rooms. It's just wonderful. Everything was wonderful. Also, I really liked how the, like, sex worker that we're aware of, Saint Cocaine or whatever. Okay, yeah. Ben is plugging his ears.
Ben hasn't read the full story yet.
I really like, she's a porn star. I really like that she ends up getting her doctorate. And so we see this, like, a lot of the narratives around porn stars are like, oh, they had daddy issues and their life is going nowhere. She gets her fucking doctorate and goes works at a university and is like, mm-hmm, a professor of time. Like, that was super cool to me.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, I really enjoyed that. And I just started reading The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. The Easter Bunny got me that volume. Volume 1 for Easter.
Awesome.
And it is wonderful and hilarious, and she's so great. And I think this is, like, stemming from me just wanting superheroes to be happy. Mm-hmm. Because she is happy, and it's, mm-hmm, wonderful, and she's computer science, and I'm computer science, and we need more computer science girls in the world. Mm-hmm. And I love that she's singing her own theme song that she wrote herself.
Yeah. Yeah,
while,
yeah,
like, in the first few pages, while beating up, like, some guy stealing a purse or whatever. That was just so hilarious. It was... I'm only, like, the first issue in, but I already love it. And I love how derpy everyone
yeah,
was.
Yeah, right?
It's I love so it. Funny. It's great it. And wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, thank
Donald,
you.
Donald, what have you... Oh, excuse me. Donald, what have you been reading?
Well, I've been buying more than I've been reading,
ain't that always the way?
Yeah. I visited the comic book store with you yesterday before we ventured off to the theater.
Check out my Instagram, I guess.
I bought Patsy Walker, a.k.a. Hellcat, number 3. I read the first 2 issues, which were great, written by Kate Leth. The artist's name escapes me, I'm sorry. But that was really great. It's actually very reminiscent of Squirrel Girl. So if you, once you're done with Squirrel Girl, I actually recommend Hellcat because it's in the same vein of art style and
wonderful
and story. And yeah. It's fun. It's super fun. Yeah.
I think we're all loving Marvel's kind of lighthearted.
Yeah.
I love super fun.
Like sometimes teen adventure stories.
Yeah. It's like the vein of, you know, Squirrel Girl, Hellcat, Ms. Marvel.
Yeah. There we go.
If you haven't read that.
I want to. I haven't read it yet. My mom has the first volume.
As someone who just started the first issue and is going to talk about it.
You'll love it.
You'll like
it. You'll love it.
Yeah. I know I'll love it. Yeah. I just need to read it.
Yeah, it's so good. And I'll read, I haven't read it yet, but I picked it up at the store. I also picked up Jason Aaron, his book, The Goddamned, number 1. He has done no wrong in my eyes. He wrote Thor, God of Thunder, is still on Thor. He's writing Southern Bastards. He's writing so much, including this book. And
isn't one of the Star Wars books his?
Yeah, Darth Vader.
Yeah, there we go.
Which is considered the best one of the bunch. And I will read this work of his, and I'm excited to read it. I also picked up Tom King's Sheriff of Babylon. He is probably one of my favorite writers in the business right now. Again, he writes Vision. He's going to write Batman. He wrote Grayson and Omega Men. So I am very excited to read that as well. But what I have read... Or no, I still bought more. I went to Bookbin like last week, and because I just got my tax return... I bought the first volume of Scott Snyder's Witches. I bought the first volume of Why the Last Man. And I bought Joshua Williamson's Nailbiter, all of which look great. Nailbiter was actually a recommendation by one of the lovely workers there. So if she's listening out there in the ether, thank you for the recommendation.
Support small business.
Support small business, definitely.
Including Infinity Break.
Yeah, if you're from the Salem, Corvallis area, the book bins in either town are great.
And sometimes they have cats, which is the best.
Yes, definitely. What else have I read, though? Unfortunately, I've been behind in my reading.
Yeah, no, Donald, your grocery list has been great.
Yeah. but yeah.
Also milk, eggs, and detergent.
Yeah, milk, bread... Maybe some cheese. But well, I'm
2 of Donald lists things.
Welcome back to Donald List Things tonight.
Boy. Tonight the Donald Lists podcast brought to you by I don't know.
Tonight
Post-it notes.
Brought to you by none of our sponsors.
Yeah, brought to you by none of our sponsors.
All right, tonight on Donald List Things, types of chairs. I'll get you started. Well, let's go around the circle. Bean bags.
Recliners.
Dining chairs.
Technically couches. They're 2 chairs glued to each other.
I mean, that's true.
I was confused at the technically part, because I do consider this as a chair.
Yes. let's move back on.
Okay.
Types of lamps. Tall ones.
Small ones.
This is a great list.
That word is floor.
Yes, floor lamps.
Floor lamps, desk lamps.
Different types of light bulbs.
Sconces.
Hi guys, I'm a professional LED. Improv comedian. Halogen.
I guess I'll just repeat myself from weeks previous. Vision's great. Doctor Strange is great. Superman, American Alien. Go pick that up, Max.
Oh, I will be.
No matter what you think about Max Landis, that book, honestly, and this is not hyperbole, it is one of the single... It belongs in the higher echelon of out-of-continuity, great Superman stories. You're going to freaking love it, Ben. pick it up.
Oh, yes. No, I...
Actually, I need to pick it up for you because I said I'd buy it for you.
Thank you.
So I will do that as soon as possible.
Thank you, Donald.
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So I actually have not been reading a ton of comics this week, despite my assertions that that would be the case. I've been working long and hard on... I've been working diligently on Westport. Obviously, that the project that involves both yourself and myself.
Yes.
And that means a lot of scripting and a lot of editing, and it's very, very lengthy, and oh my god, I hate it. So listen to Westport, because that means my job is finally going to be worth it. But I did listen to the Superior Foes... What? I did read the Superior Foes of Spider-Man, which I believe is a like 16 or so issue arc that literally focuses on, yeah, the kind of D-list villains... of Spider-Man's and their attempt to basically swindle not one, not two, but four mobs. It is a fun book. I can see why Nick Spencer and Steve Lieber are kind of taking off right now. In terms of like comedy books, but in terms of crime books as well. They've got a new book out from Image, I believe, soon called like The Hit or The,
yeah, the Job talking, or something like that. You were talking to me about that yesterday. I think it's The Hit.
Yeah. And you said Spencer was behind one of the recent Ant-Man titles, am I right?
Yeah. Yeah, I recommended that a few episodes ago.
It's yeah, very good. So yeah, I'm enjoying both of those creators right now. Superior Foes of Spider-Man is a really engaging book. I talked about it when we were talking about the movie earlier in this. Like that book builds tension really well, and kind of then makes you like forget about those tension points. But then the second it switches back to the scene that there was tension in, you're like, oh, that's right, this is happening, and you get to like read the conclusion of that, and it's a really engaging book. I enjoyed it. I think I blasted through the whole thing in about three sittings.
Awesome.
But then, yeah, I also cracked open Ms. Marvel from about 2 years ago. And Donald, Katie, I don't mean to like spoil anything, but that book everyone liked was really good.
Yeah, it's amazing.
As I said, I kind of get into comics like a year and a half too late.
Sure.
Yeah, it turns out Ms. Marvel's like pretty quality. I read the first, I think I'm on issue 4 right now.
Nice.
And I'll be damned if that isn't a fascinating supporting cast and a really compelling protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're talking like Spider-Man levels of good supporting cast.
Yeah, well, I think what's great about Kamala Khan is she's sort of the modern-day Peter Parker.
Oh, because easily.
Peter Parker now, he's like, in the new comic, he's like 30. He's like Tony Stark level because he owns like a company.
Horizon.
And, yeah, Horizon. And he's like, I don't know, what made Peter Parker so great is he's this normal teenager with normal teenage problems while also struggling to be a superhero, and it's cool to see that brought back with Ms. Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
I think because she's such a genuine character.
Yeah, so. And in the same way Spider-Man has like, you know, his, I almost called him J.K. Simmons, in the same way Spider-Man has his J. Jonah Jameson and his Aunt May and his Harry Osborn and his other people he knows, Betty Brant, you know, et cetera, like his kind of like close circle of like, well, I guess one could say his web of characters. You know, Kamala Khan has her mom, her dad, her older brother, her, you know, her best friend, the guy that owns the convenience store or works at the convenience store, like that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
She's got a similar kind of network of relatable characters that, yeah, it makes her for a really compelling story.
Sounds marvelous.
It. Anyway, Katie, this is your last appearance on Super Cinema.
No!
Anyway, Katie, we are of course glad to have you on the show. But I believe that wraps up this episode of Super Cinema. We don't have a we don't have a question this week, but we'll be right back with our. Oh Jesus.
Really glad we're ending on that's marvelous and you guys groaning.
It wouldn't be an Infinity Break production if somebody on it didn't hate puns.
I love puns.
Puns are so
I am
great.
So like when I inevitably become a dad, like I'm gonna use every dad joke out
I'm
of
gonna
the
be
book.
A dad even if I'm a mom.
Mom jokes.
Oh boy. This wraps up this episode of Super Cinema. Once again, I'm your host, Benjamin Hamlin.
I'm Donald.
And we're joined, as always, and perhaps forever, by Katie Hughes.
Please.
Katie Hughes.
Once again, you can find us all on Twitter, at Ben C. Hamlin.
At not Donald.
At Katie's Lynn H.
where you can talk to us about comics or all sorts of jazz like that. You can find our show at InfinityBreak.net and at InfinityBreak23 on Twitter. Please engage in the conversations. We like talking comics with pretty much everyone. Donald and I are both featured heavily in the Westport Saga, episode 2 of which is going to be coming out soon. And Katie, you are actually in the role of it of next week.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
It was good. I did a good job. I was thrown into being the leader of the team because I had good luck.
I want to do another role with it soon.
We're going to have you back on soon.
It's been over a year, Ben.
It has been last July.
Last July.
Last July was last time you were on.
Okay.
That's under a year.
That being said, we do want to have you on very soon. And we tried. We tried.
Yeah, I was out of town. I'm sorry.
Nah, no worries. No worries. We'll bring you back on soon. But yeah, no, until next time, this has been Super Cinema. This podcast was part of Infinity Break, where we tell stories our own way. If you want to stay in the loop about what we do here at Infinity Break, you can find us on any social media platform at InfinityBreak23. That's Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram. If you like what we do here at Infinity Break, check out our other shows, comics, and videos at InfinityBreak.net and help spread the word by telling other people about our team. Leave a review on iTunes. The more 5-star reviews we have, the easier it is for people to find us and share in the infinite madness. Don't forget to check out our store under the Shop tab on our site, and if you're feeling generous, check out our Patreon at patreon.com/InfinityBreak. Your monthly donation can help us improve the quality of this show and develop more shows for your listening and viewing pleasure. Until next time, Infinity Breakers, stay in the loop.